Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. When people talk of the magic of Silicon Valley, we know we're talking about hundreds of thousands of individuals collectively trying to envision the future and then engineer it into reality. But it's easy to fall back on hero worship and fear for the future when an icon like Steve Jobs announces he's stepping down as CEO of Apple. The seesawing of the stock this morning echoes that very concern. Apple's profits are built on innovation. The question now is whether Apple without Jobs will do as well cultivating and harnessing creativity. Shenny Jardin co-edits the tech culture site BoingBoing.net.
I hope that they'll continue to innovate and stay true to the roots of the company as a company that was really about testing the boundaries of what's possible. I hope that they don't become predictable.
That may be what Apple's competitors hope for. Under Jobs, Apple became a force to contend with in a number of industries beyond the PC: music, movies, mobile phones, advertising, and a few more to boot. California's ambitious renewable energy goal of 33% by 2020 is still a long ways from being met. Some farmers wonder why the state's own policies prevent them from pitching in as much as they can. As Katrina Schwartz reports for our Climate Watch team, a bill moving through Sacramento aims to fix that.
Russ Lester of Dixon Ridge Farm has become the poster child for California bioenergy, and he's a committed organic farmer.
That's our natural bird repellent.
He uses electronic predator bird sounds to scare away pests. Lester is one of the largest producers of organic walnuts in the state, and he's declared it his mission to make his operation energy neutral. That means producing at least as much power as he's using.
We were thinking about other kinds of forms of energy that we could produce here on farm to offset our importation of energy and to do it in a more environmentally sustainable, natural way.
Lester found he could generate the power he uses to process walnut shells from bioenergy. To do that, he's installed something called a biogasifier that burns walnut shells at high temperatures until 85% of them turn into a propane-like gas used to run his generator. Then he uses the heat produced in that process to dry the freshly harvested walnuts. Lester installed the biogasifier thinking that he could help California meet its renewable energy goals and reduce his own energy costs at the same time. But he quickly found out that creating electricity wasn't enough. He also needed to be connected to the electrical grid.
My naivete said that, oh, we already have the solar interconnected under net metering.
California's had a so-called net metering program in place for more than a decade. It allows consumers to generate power from renewable sources to offset the energy they use. Surplus power is then sold back onto the grid for credits.
And the state of California has adopted all these goals to get biomass and biogas and all renewables online quickly. This ought to be a no-brainer. This ought to be done really quickly. So I did not even look into the interconnection process.
So Lester was a little shocked to find out that the program only covers solar and wind power. But he found an ally in State Senator Lois Wolk.
If we want renewable energy to be an important part of our energy production, which we do, then it seems to me we have to be technology neutral.
Wolk introduced Senate Bill 489 to modify the net metering program to allow all types of renewables, including bioenergy, to be sold back to the grid.
We have a lot of creative growers who would like to be part of solving the energy crisis, as well as reducing the cost of their energy production. And this is a win-win for everybody.
Well, maybe not everybody. Right now, utilities buy no more than 5% of their total energy load through the net metering program. They oppose the Wolk bill for three main reasons. One, it means having to deal with many small electricity producers across the state. Two, if people create their own electricity, they aren't buying it, and that's bad for business. And three, that power doesn't count toward the utility's state-imposed renewable energy targets. Edward Randolph has been following the debate from his post at the Public Utility Commission. That's the body that regulates utilities.
It was an interesting conversation to watch because I think a lot of folks, myself included, started out by looking at the bill saying, this is something we probably won't like.
PG&E declined an interview for this story, but its opposition letter raises concern that an expansion of net metering will force energy prices up.
But after a thorough discussion with staff and then a thorough discussion with the commissioners, everybody came to realize that the economics of the analysis made sense, and it made sense for us to support the bill.
Randolph says that the PUC's support came largely because SB 489 and could substantially reduce the cost to ratepayers. For Russ Lester, the bottom line is clear.
Farmers want to do this. What they don't want to do is get into a bureaucratic fight with PG&E and SoCal Edison and those folks over getting interconnected. They just can't afford that time and money to do that.
The bill has already made its way through the Senate and several committees in the Assembly. Supporters have high hopes that Governor Brown will be signing it before the end of the legislative year in September. For the California Report, I'm Katrina Schwartz.
We have photos of Dixon Ridge Farm online. Look for the link at our website, californiareport.org. Downtown Los Angeles is home to rich cultural offerings, like the LA Philharmonic, and to thousands of mentally ill and homeless people just a few blocks away on Skid Row. Yesterday, those two worlds came together briefly in the basement of a mental health center. LA Bureau Chief Chrissy Clark takes us there.
40 people gathered in a room with fluorescent lights and stained purple carpet to hear a lunchtime performance of Bach's Third Violin Sonata. Juan Serrano, who's schizophrenic, was in the audience, swaying tattooed arms to the music with his young daughter on his lap. By the end of the concert, he was wiping tears from his eyes.
I was trying not to sob and make it obvious, but I just couldn't help it. It was just so beautiful. It's amongst the most beautiful things that I think I've ever heard in my entire life.
Carl Dawkins happened to show up at the clinic just as the concert was starting, so he hung around.
I felt tranquility. I was somewhere that was very peaceful.
The musician playing for them was Robert Gupta, a violinist with the Los Angeles Philharmonic. Every few months, he gives a concert on Skid Row. He got the idea a few years ago when he started mentoring a homeless musician with schizophrenia named Nathaniel Ayers, who later was made famous in the movie The Soloist.
And, you know, what if there are other Nathaniels out there? What if there are other people that can be so moved by music that they might begin to seek treatment?
Gupta's next concert on Skid Row is in November. Tonight, he plays the Hollywood Bowl. For the California Report, I'm Chrissy Clark in Los Angeles.
That's the California Report for Thursday, August 25th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children. The California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org. And URS Corporation, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical services to public agencies and private companies. URScorp.com.